Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, Apple reportedly in talks to license Google's AI, Gemini. CNBC's Steve Kovac explains the story.
This is huge because the assumption up until just wee hours of this morning when this report came out was Apple's going to build its own model. It's going to do everything in-house, as it has done so many times.
Whoever develops it, AI is changing the U.S. economy. Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale on all of its potential.
Could it ever be sentient?
Yes. Yes? We're learning very much how the human brain works, and we're learning ways that this thing can be way more advanced than the human brain. That is the big question that's very scary. I personally think it takes decades longer to get there.
Plus, Japan's Nippon Steel, ready to buy U.S. steel for over $14 billion. David McCall, the president of the U.S. Steel Union, says not everything should be open to allies.
Japan's an ally, but that doesn't necessarily make them an economic ally.
It's Monday, March 18th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today. It's a Monday, and last week we did see down day on Friday. The NASDAQ 100 was actually down for 2 weeks in a row. That's the first time that's happened since October 23. But right now, you're going to see new week. We are looking at some pretty good numbers. The S&P is indicated up by, or has gained over 7% for this quarter. The NASDAQ over close to 6.5%. The Dow is the laggard, but it's still up by about 2.75%. The Treasury yields, those have been something of interest with the hotter than expected CPI and PPI numbers.
You have any corned beef?
I did not. Green. I did have some Irish soda bread.
Soda bread goes with corned beef. Green beer?
Nope, did not have any.
Green bagel?
Nope.
They're all available.
We wore green.
Parades, nothing like that. It was on a, you know, I like it better when it's during the week, I think.
I do too. I think I'm more likely to, because the kids being in school get more excited about it. We did set a leprechaun trap.
It's hard to drink. You can't really drink on a Sunday.
Sunday night, yeah, no.
Even during the day, I don't think. The Fed kicks off its two-day policy meeting with a news conference set for Wednesday. The central bank's widely expected to hold rates steady. Be a shocker either way. I mean, there's just no way. It will also update, though, the dot plot, or the projections of individual committee members for when there might be cuts. Some Fed watchers say the Fed could forecast fewer rate cuts after a succession of some hot inflation prints. Now to a piece in the Wall Street Journal that says that it says a lot about economic things. what happens in there? They're just like this. It's like the person running it. It's just so boring. Oh, I got to move it. Advisors to President Trump presented him with a short list of potential candidates to be the next Fed chair. If Trump wins, and is that what you think happens? What do you think happens?
Probably.
You have one job. You have one job.
Just I liked your, this is so boring.
This is so boring. I can't even stay awake to run the teleprompter. advisors Steve Moore and...
Maybe up your delivery.
Advisors Steve Moore and Art Laffer apparently met with Trump at Mar-a-Lago last week. And this reminds me of when Cheney was helping W find a vice president, because they gave him three names. Kevin Hassett, friend of the show. Kevin Warsh. It'd be confusing. Another Kevin, two Kevins and an Art, also a friend of the show. But Art Laffer himself, maybe. The reports say that Laffer didn't participate in the advisor's discussion, though, about putting his name on the short list. Kevin Warsh is a former Fed governor who advised President George W. Bush and Trump in the past. has mentioned Kevin Warsh positively. And then, you know, Kevin Hassett was in the last administration. He was an economic advisor to President Trump. Laffer advised President Reagan. That was a while ago. The advisors considered other names that didn't make the shortlist, including former World Bank President David Malpass and former Fed nominee Judy Shelton. But I was thinking about Judy, but she failed to win confirmation by the Senate when she was nominated during the Trump administration. And I've had people describe her as just too Trumpy. I'm not sure what the hell that means, but I don't think it's it's kind of a pejorative if you're too Trumpy. I've been called Trumpy. I'm not Trumpy. Am I Trumpy? I'm pudgy. I'm not Trumpy. You don't know where to go with that.
I really don't. It's like hot potatoes, 6 o'clock in the morning on a Monday.
Trying to keep people awake. Trying to jar them into keeping them awake. You see, Trump said something about the auto industry. Spent two solid minutes talking about the auto industry. China comes here, Mexico. If this happens, if we don't do tariffs, auto industry is in trouble. If we let this happen, it could be a bloodbath for the auto industry.
I think that doesn't matter for anybody. If I'm not elected, it will be a bloodbath.
Yes, he's not elected. Right. They did it.
And people.
That doesn't matter, though. Oh, no, it doesn't matter. But I'm just in this environment right now. I tell this story all the time. When we said we had President Biden on, or when he was running, and he said, I'm going to, what are you going to be like, Mr. Biden? I'm going to be Joe Biden. He said, I'm going to be Joe Biden. Every right-wing news organization said, and they knew he didn't, but they all said that he said, I'm going to beat Joe Biden, as if he didn't know who he was running against. This is the same thing. This is the same thing, and you don't need fake news. Drudge has lost its mind. I don't even want to give it a click. Sometimes they have stuff on it I want to see, but at this point, I'm not even going to click it because they're so despicable at this point. I saw the Babylon Bee said that apparently Trump is talking about a nuclear war because he was having some guacamole, and he said, wow, this guacamole is the bomb. So the Babylon Bee says that he's now threatening. I mean, that's where we are right now in the news cycle. And we've got eight more months of pure. But fake news, you don't even need AI or Russia. You just pick your mainstream media outlet, and they will spoon feed their own version of fake news.
I would say any media outlet is going to spin it the way they want to see it spun.
Well, thank you for being so, you know, responsible and mature.
Me?
No, the mainstream media. No, I'm
all right, let's
you get are. To... You're responsible. No, the mainstream media could care less. They could care less because it's so important. It reminds me of that guy at the New York Times that said, look, this Trump guy's different. Anything goes. We need to stop him. Normally, we'd be journalists, but not anymore. We need to be activists because this guy is so beyond the pale. We're allowed to do what I saw something about Nature. The journal used to say it would never, you know, the scientific journal, never get involved in political decisions. Now they're saying it's our duty to endorse one candidate or the other, given. So it's just we're just going down a very
hyper-partisan
world. Yeah, we're going down a very bad path.
Let's talk about some news out of Russia. Vladimir Putin winning another six-year term as president after he claimed a landslide win in an election with no real opposition. At a news conference yesterday, NBC's Keir Simmons asked Putin about the death of Alexei Navalny in prison last month. Putin, who rarely speaks Navalny's name, had this to say.
As for Mr. Navalny, he has perished. That is always a sad event. Well, we've had other instances where people died in prison. Has nothing like that ever happened in the United States? It has happened, and not just once. By the way, this will be unexpected, but several days before Mr. Navalny perished, I was told by some of my colleagues, not administration employees, but some people, that there's an idea to exchange Mr. Navalny for some people in prison in Western countries. Believe it or not, the person talking to me hardly finished their sentence when I said, I agree, but just on one condition. We will exchange him for him to never come back. Let him stay there. That's it. But unfortunately, the thing that happened happens. Such things happen, and you can't do anything about it. That is life.
Navalny's supporters have alleged that Putin had him killed to thwart an imminent prisoner swap.
It's tough to watch, and you just, I mean.
To listen to it.
It is. But what we were just talking about, we like to feel a lot, we like to feel vastly superior to the propaganda that comes, but I don't feel vastly superior.
I do.
Apple's reportedly in talks with Google to license and build its Gemini AI engine into the iPhone. That's according to a Bloomberg report that says that the tech giants are in active negotiations that could result in Gemini powering some new features that could be released for the iPhone later this year. The report says Apple has also held discussions with OpenAI and is considered using its model.
Joining us right now to talk about what a deal like this could mean for both companies is our CNBC technology correspondent, Steve Kovac. And Steve, this is pretty interesting. I was digging through the reporting on this, trying to get a sense of whether this is imminent, whether there's apparently they were also in talks with open source AI. So how do you come down?
It sounds imminent in the sense that this is likely going to be stuff we see in the iPhones that come out this fall and likely going to be announced in June during Apple's annual developers conference. This is huge because the assumption up until just early wee hours of this morning when this report came out was Apple's going to build its own model. It's going to do everything in-house as it has done so many times. It does everything it can do in-house. But this is just a testament of they don't have the goods yet.
Because they're not doing it in-house,
right?
Because they can't.
And this is super interesting because 5 or 6 years ago, Apple hired a Google employee named John Gianandrea to report to Tim Cook, the CEO, to run all the AI stuff. Here they are on the cusp of an AI announcement, which Tim Cook has said multiple times it's going to break new ground in AI. It's interesting that they have to go to Google at least to help in part for them to do whatever it is they think they're going to do. I would also note this Gemini stuff is also running on some Google and Android phones already.
Right.
Samsung earlier this year has January. Some. But like if you look at it, what can it do? It can erase some photos. It can do some live translation in different languages. Are those the whiz bang features that are going to make people, you know, say, oh, I have a year old iPhone, but I want the AI iPhone? Maybe.
Well, if everybody else has it and you don't, you start to fall further and further behind. That's the issue with it. There were questions raised already, though, because you have antitrust regulators in this country looking at the relationship that already exists between Google and Apple.
Just
when you're talking about, what is it, $20 billion a year or $19 billion a year that Google is paying Apple to be the source of searches.
Right. And on top of that, you have there are two platforms, Apple and Google on mobile. That's it. And you have the two platforms tying up even closer together. We're expecting the Department of Justice to sue Apple for antitrust any day now, perhaps even this week, tomorrow, or the next day. You can hear them over at the DOJ, Jonathan Kander's people, typing right now, trying to get this in there, because this is putting these two together on this fundamental new kind of technology. It's not just about app stores anymore. It's about the AI tie-up as well. So I can totally see them looking into that as well, just strengthening the duopoly they already have over the smartphone market. That's going to be a huge issue.
Apple shares up 1% this morning. Alphabet shares up by 5% this morning. Very interesting
stuff.
Shows
you which way you think the money's going to go, too.
Yeah. Steve, thank you.
Thanks.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, how AI fits into America's future. 8VC founder and Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale with his vision for innovation and the economy.
The real question is, how do you apply AI to increase productivity in the economy? So there's all these parts of the economy you can pull out hundreds of billions of dollars of waste thanks to AI productivity, and I think that's the way you want to play it right now.
We'll be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
This is Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I don't need to tell you who I am or who this is, because...
Please do.
Or who's off today.
Please.
I thought he Patrick just said everybody...
We're always looking for new viewers.
Okay. I'm Joe Kernan. This is Becky Quick. Andrew Ross Sorkin is off today, but he'll be back eventually.
Yeah.
Join us to talk AI, Reddit, and much more. Joe Lonsdale, 8VC founding partner and Palantir co-founder. Where do you want to start? You want to start TikTok? You want to start, I mean, the whole situation we saw with AI, I worry about AI for a lot of reasons, but a woke AI that's infected with the woke mind virus, how can we prevent, isn't it inevitable that they're one of the AI sites is going to be that way just from who's putting in the garbage in, garbage out?
The Apple news is a little bit funny. A lot of us looked at Gemini and said, what in tarnation? And Apple said, we have to have that. It's a little bit ridiculous. Now, that said,
I wondered about that, though, because it also said they were in negotiations with OpenAI. They could just be negotiating with everybody right
now. They probably are. And listen, Google does have a very strong AI team and all these things. So the Reddit IPO is the big news right now. Reddit is very similar to these other companies. Reddit has some really helpful parts if you're a nerd trying to learn physics. If you're doing like hard technical things, there's really good things on Reddit. And yet you saw the big risk in their IPO is that they have people basically moderating everything by hand. And these people, part of their compensation, because they're not paid, so their compensation is that they get to be ideological. And so they have this very ideological workforce, which is going to teach the AI to be woke as well. So
Volunteers
working for free. And part of the reason they can work for free is they get to impose their ideology. Right? So it's a very funny culture you got in the tech company, in all these tech companies.
So we have that ideology, which I want no part of, and then we got the CCP ideology, which do you think is a real threat?
I think it's frankly a bigger threat. I mean, obviously the competence in the U.S. is a big deal, and we have to make U.S. competent and overcome that. But I think China is very scary. I think giving them access, you know, as AI gets better, giving them access to 100 million of our people over TikTok is insane. And, you know, this is not a ban we're talking about. This is talking about not letting CCP own this. It's not allowed to own the New York Times. It's not allowed, you know, to own, you know, Rupert Murdoch had to become a U.S. citizen.
CCP doesn't own the New York Times now? They come up with all that stuff on their own?
I'm not a huge fan there, but I think this is just how the world works. You can't give your adversary, and you have a crazy dictator in charge.
This, I think, is pretty important because we get wrapped up in the stuff where we're shooting at ourselves with these things. That's very different when you're talking about the CCP or you're talking about Putin. Those are actual threats to our democracy. But when you have 100 million Americans or 170 million Americans saying, I want my MTV, I want my TikTok, what happens? Because I see this slowing down in the Senate already. And senators saying, yeah, we're glad that the House voted for it, but we're not going to do that. What happens? How does this play out?
You know, I think there are some concerns by putting out, like, David Sachs, Elon Musk, others on the right are saying we want to make sure this is not giving the president the power to go after any platform they want. And, you know, my reading of the bill is actually that CFIUS powers are already a superset of these things for that.
Sure.
And so I actually don't think this bill creates that. But I think they should be very clear the bill does not create extra power mm-hmm. for someone to go after Elon Musk or to go after, frankly, Meta. But they need to go after CCP and TikTok and fix it. And I think this is your duty as an American, and it's really important that they do this.
You think the senators will withstand that, though? We talked about how some House members were getting 20 calls a minute when TikTok put up to say, contact your representative to say you want to keep us.
I mean, and that's why they responded 50-0 against TikTok, because they saw how powerful that was for the CCP. I think any senator that's pro-America and that's doing their duty is gonna fix this and is going to take TikTok away from the CCP.
I think X is more... essential than ever at this point. I've been starting to come around to that conclusion.
You need one place that's not ideologically censored that way, right? And so these sites are important.
Are you shocked at some of the stuff you see on mainstream media? They have definitely abdicated their responsibility for trying to represent both sides because they think that they have a role to play as far as activism because they think it's that important And I think if they think, for example, if they think Biden versus Trump, there are people in mainstream media that are definitely part of the Biden team. They're going to do anything they can possibly do at this point to make sure Trump is not reelected.
I think the level of faction in this country is very unhealthy. I think you go back similarly to times and empires are not doing well, like Rome and others, and the internal faction, they hate each other more than they hate the barbarians that are going to conquer them and take them down, and that's very dangerous.
But they don't deny it. And they you saw Rudin a couple years ago said it's no longer part of the journalistic sort of mantra that I need to be up to. This guy's so bad that all bets are off, and we need to do what we can.
I was really disappointed to see people like Nancy Pelosi going along with
the fake bloodbath.
That's
unbelievable.
It was ridiculous. Yeah.
With AI, which one of these are the right ones? How do you give us like a user's guide or an investor's guide to which of these is any good, or do we not know yet and you have to bet on all of them?
So, you know, the way I would play AI right now is it's a productivity question. So what the real question is, how do you apply AI to increase productivity in the economy? And there's lots of areas. You see Ramp here in New York City. You see all sorts of other companies applying it, you know, obviously Palantir, to basically raise productivity of services. So the question is not so much which part of the infrastructure matters. To me, the question that we actually bet on today is going in industries. How do you make this billing process we're spending $200 billion on four times as efficient, right? So there's all these parts of the economy. You can pull out hundreds of billions of dollars of waste thanks to AI productivity. And I think that's the way you want to play it right now.
Can we talk quickly about DEI and the woke mind virus? Did you want to do that? I saw it in the notes. Do you mind?
Sure.
I mean, is it a, I've seen it called almost a secular religion at this point.
You know, there's a challenge in America right now where are things going to be based on competence and merit, or are they going to be based on something else? I think when you don't have accountability, you don't have confidence at the forefront, you start focusing on virtue signaling in other ways. And this is one of the ways in which you can get around merit, in which you can break things. And I think people are realizing it. I think people are speaking against it. There's still going to be a long, hard battle to push back towards merit in lots of parts of our society.
Don't you think after the October 7th and what we saw, Houston, we have a problem in our higher institutions.
Yeah.
Do we not?
I think a major problem.
A lot of people
are aware of this problem in a way they weren't before. It's going to take courage and boldness to go in, eliminate it. I think what Ben Sasse did at University of Florida, actually just firing a lot of people who shouldn't have been there in the first place, is the right thing.
Ben Sasse. I mean, if you lose Ben Sasse.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if that's the guy that's going to come in, I don't know.
I think rational, moderate people are realizing we have to go in and we have to eliminate a lot of these positions that are not adding any value at all. I think they're a ZERP phenomenon. And you're going to see a lot of merit coming back, and that's going to be a fight that we have to fight and stand up and do.
It's difficult that you can be on the side of that, but then you have as your flag bearer Donald Trump. So it's just all so crazy, isn't it?
I think he's an unfortunate flag bearer for the moderates we're trying to win over to just focus on competence.
But who else you got? Otherwise, you got Biden with Kamala waiting in the wings.
We need more of my generation to step up and get involved in leadership. So this is something of importance.
All right. As far as AI goes, the biggest threat is what, Joe? 10 years from now.
You know, the biggest threat, if you ask obviously the leaders in the tech world right now, is how quickly does AGI get to be much, much smarter than people? And are you creating something that's gonna completely change the nature of the world? Like that's the biggest question. I don't think any of us know. You know, basically right now, it's a tool that's going to massively increase productivity.
Right.
It's going to make us a lot wealthier. There's all these positives. There's a scary question if it gets too smart and someone uses it for something that we don't even understand.
Uses itself for something that we don't understand. Isn't that possible if it's sentient eventually? Could it ever be sentient?
Yes. I mean, yes.
We're learning
very much how the human brain works, and we're learning ways that this thing can be way more advanced than the human brain. That is the big question that's very scary. I personally think it takes decades longer to get there, but very smart friends of mine think we'll be there in 5 or 10 years. That is the existential question right now on that side, if it's scary or not.
If 5 to 10 years is the low end, what are you thinking is more likely?
I think it takes a very long time because I think there's
30,
more steps.
40, 50 years?
I think the universe has like more steps to the game than other people think, and I think our brains and our minds are more complicated than people realize. So maybe it's naive of me, but I think it could take a couple generations for it to get
I hope you're right.
If we went out to a bar and had a couple of cocktails, could I really get you to go off like you didn't really just now? Or was
you know, it's tough because I tend to agree with people like Mark Andreessen who yeah. have all these positive views of how this could be used in the world. I actually think this actually makes everyone better off. I think poor people who are not doing well economically could all of a sudden get lots of things for very cheap thanks to AI. I think it's really positive. And so I'm more focused on that. And I don't think we should stop it. But yeah. I do think there's this like long tail threat, which is something we have to think
and
about.
Elon can survive because people are out to get him at this point, as you can tell.
Well, I think it's the only thing that could be more important than the things Elon's already working on otherwise. And so I think it's something that he worries about.
Okay, Joe. Thanks.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, the $14 billion deal for Japan's Nippon Steel to buy U.S. Steel. The president of the U.S. Steel Union, David McCall, on the labor and the supply chain issues involved.
It's a real issue about are we going to continue to melt and pour steel in the United States? And that's a national defense issue, critical infrastructure, and supply chain issues.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod, today with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan. Here's Joe with our last story of the episode.
Let's talk about the bid for U.S. steel by Japan's Nippon Steel. President Biden called it vital, in his words, for U.S. steel to remain domestically owned and operated. Last week, the head of the United Steelworkers Union welcomed that message. Meanwhile, in a statement to CNBC, U.S. Steel said it also has the backs of American steelworkers, and that, in their words, it has been made clear that there will be no job losses, no plant closures, and no transfer of production resulting from this transaction. Joining us now, David McCall, United Steelworkers Union International President. And it's hard to, David, it's good to see you. Thanks for joining us. It's hard to separate all the different concerns here. And I'm wondering if should we be worried with all the onshoring and all the concern about keeping things in the United States, strategic industries, usually, you know, worrying about China? Is it important that U.S. steel remains independent, or is it important that Nippon were to honor all of the existing labor contracts? What are we really talking about here?
Well, it's really a combination of both. I mean, first of all, you know, we recognize, as everybody does, Japan's an ally, but that doesn't necessarily make them an economic ally. For years, we've had issues over trade cases where they've dumped product into the U.S., either selling it below market prices or it being subsidized. Japan has an overcapacity of steelmaking in their country, and along with their JVs in China. It's a real issue about are we going to continue to melt and pour steel in the United States? And that's a national defense issue, critical infrastructure, and supply chain issues. And for our members, it's making sure that it is a domestic owner that continues to be able to backstop our not only our labor agreements, but our pension plans, our retiree health care plans, and to make sure that we have capital continuing to go into this industry. On the announcement of the transition, Mr. Mori from Nippon said that they were on a direct plan with U.S. Steel over about the future of our facilities. And U.S. Steel has been shutting down steelmaking capacity in this country over the last several years in terms of blast furnace production, which you need for national defense and critical infrastructure. It can't be made in electric arc furnaces in the same manner, in the same way. So it is an issue. And they make a statement. What makes it so insincere is they make a statement, there'll be no layoffs, there'll be no plant closures. But in our discussions with them, they say there'll be no plant closures, there'll be no layoffs unless there's a business plan change. Well, that's not worth the water that it's held in. So their rhetoric on one side of the issue has a lot more to do with the short-term gain with with their stock price and with institutional investors in terms of their short-term gain, not the long-term security of this country.
So you don't want this deal, no matter what, to go through, or is there a way to structure it, or with the right type of guarantees, would it make sense? I mean, we do live in a global world, and, you know, we see beer makers. So many things are owned internationally. And if there's a global overcapacity, and if, for example, U.S. Steel is going to keep closing plants here domestically, if it would be a stronger company combined with Nippon, would you ever endorse the deal, David? Would the steelworkers ever give a thumbs up to it with the right guarantees?
The problem is the transaction itself, Nippon Steel won't be a signatory to the labor agreement. They've structured it in which a subsidiary of Nippon Steel based here in the U.S., which is really just a shell company, is a signatory to the labor agreement. Nippon has no intentions of actually being the owner. And, you know, there's real issues for us that won't be public reporting on their finances, which a significant portion of our labor agreement involves our profit sharing. Of course, we need to be able to verify what that means. And likewise, we've got restrictions on their upstreaming ability in order to, you know, take money out of the company, profits out of the company, transfer them somewhere else and put huge amount of debts on the company going forward. So those are real issues. And the way the transaction is structured, it doesn't work for us in any meaning.
It's not a CFIUS thing. It's more an economic concerns as far as.
I think it's a combination of both.
And, you do. Okay.
You know, not only one of the things that concern us is there are other multinational companies that we've done deals with, but before the transaction, they've reached out to us. They've made concessions. They've talked to us about what our needs are and what our concerns and our guarantees need to be. In this case, Nippon never reached out to us.
David, thanks. I think we understand where the issues are at this point. We appreciate you enlightening us on all those issues, David. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's the podcast for today. Thank you for tuning in. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC starting at 6 Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, follow Squawk Pod wherever you're listening now and keep tuning in. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.